Welcome to Managing Uncertainty, a podcast series from the experts at BrightPath discussing global risk, business continuity, and crisis management. Will you be ready to lead your organization through its critical moment?
Hello and welcome to the Managing Uncertainty podcast. This is our Brightcast edition for the week of October 7th, 2019. I'm Brian Strauser, Principal and CEO here at BrightPath.
This is Barry Wheeler. I'm a consultant here at BrightPath.
So as everyone knows, during this edition, we take a look at some hot topics and things that are going on or that we think are going to happen around the world and talk about their impact on the business and nonprofit community. And I think we're going to start today with some discussion about the European Union and the United Kingdom. Bray.
Everybody's favorite topic, Brexit. So the reason we're mentioning this week, and to kind of be brief, but some developments that have happened here at the beginning of this week. The United Kingdom is kind of actively in discussions with the EU and some of those partners to try and negotiate their way out of Brexit. They're hoping that the EU will give some kind of latitude or make some concessions in the debate, and the EU is holding pretty firm. So the notable event that happened this week was a call between German Chancellor Angela Merkel and Prime Minister Boris Johnson of the UK. They had a pretty frank discussion by all accounts. Boris was trying to lay out his plans. Chancellor Merkel was having
none of it.
And so they really didn't end up with any kind of an agreement between the two of them. And to kind of pile on to that, the European Council President Donald Tusk also today, we're recording this on Tuesday, had some pretty kind of stark words from Mr. Johnson over kind of what the UK is planning to do. His quote, and I believe his tweet was, "What's at stake isn't winning some stupid blame game. At stake is the future of Europe and the UK, as well as the security and interests of our people. You don't want a deal. You don't want an extension. You don't want to revoke." And so
they're just going to leave.
Yeah.
Right.
So essentially, my impression is Boris is putting on a show. Prime Minister Johnson is putting on a show and with no real intent to reach a deal. And the EU isn't going to play the game. And they're going to let kind of UK internal politics play themselves out. And they're going to leave without a deal.
There's 3 weeks to go, right?
Yep.
I think that at this point, this is what the Prime Minister wants. I think he wants to leave without a deal. The deal was they're going to leave. That's the deal.
Right.
I mean, I think it was over the weekend. He essentially told the press, I don't think this was in Parliament, I think he told the press in a discussion that he was basically daring the Queen to remove him, that he wasn't going to resign. He wasn't going to give up the fight. And if the Queen wanted to, she could just remove him, which that hasn't happened in over 200 years, I believe. I don't see that happening in their current constitutional structure.
Not based on the nature of this topic. I think if this was some kind of extreme personal, kind of moral, ethical dilemma, he's committed serious crimes or something like that, she may get involved. But the Queen's been pretty hands-off and pretty kind of ceremonious with her role in a lot of this stuff and kind of letting the politics play politics. So
it's going to leave a lot of things unsettled on the table around borders and immigration and trade and travel and a lot of stuff. I mean, even in my own personal case, I'm a grad student at a school in London, distance learning student, but I do have to go over there for some things in the coming years. And when we had our call a few weeks ago for new students with their staff about visas and immigration and stuff, I mean, almost every question about short-term study visas, which as a U.S. citizen, I can just show up with some documentation and be given that on the spot as long as I'm leaving within 6 months. But for students coming from other countries that are in my program, that's not true. They have to have the visa before they can travel. And the question or the answer to almost every question was, we don't know and we probably won't know until after this happens. So it's very unsettling. And that's just students. That's not even trade.
Well, and they were even, didn't you mention that they were even saying it for you too, that you asked, well, yeah, you kind of asked the question as a U.S. and they were like, yeah, we don't know either.
Yeah, I did. I mean, I don't think they anticipated anything's going to be any different. We have our own, the United States and the U.K. have their own immigration agreement about visas and visa-free travel. And, you know, as does with the EU, as the United States does with the EU and individually with EU countries. But yeah, it's kind of, I mean, I will need to go there, I think, in January for some things. And I think that I think that the current state is true. I can just show up with the documentation that's required. But yeah, I'll have to figure all this out. And none of us are going to know anything until November.
Yep. So, I mean, that's really why we're mentioning it today, is just kind of conversation, kind of formal, some of these more formal talks between the UK and Europe are starting to happen. And they're not going well. So by all accounts, you know, as an organization, really start kind of thinking through what your plans are. Travel doesn't sound like there's going to be any disruption kind of before them, but you'll need to be prepared for potentially some really significant changes, or there may not be any changes. So that's over the next 3 weeks, it's going to be a topic to definitely watch, and I'm sure we're going to talk more about it.
Undoubtedly.
Moving on to our next topic, it's really the withdrawal of U.S. troops from Syria. This one will be pretty quick because there's not much kind of unfurled with this yet. But really why we're mentioning this is twofold. The U.S. has asked or is pulling out their troops and essentially kind of told Turkey, handle the situation. And that's caused some real kind of, to use a big word, consternation with the Syrian Kurds, who have been longtime U.S. allies in this area of the world. We're kind of leaving them on their own, and they don't get along with Turkey. Mm-hmm. And Turkey historically has not treated some of their minority populations all that well. And so there's real concern kind of both within the U.S., in Europe, with the Kurdish population in the Middle East around what this withdrawal will mean for them. There's also kind of insinuations from the Kurds that says, hey, you know, all our help that we've given you with ISIS and some of these terror organizations in the region, yeah, we might be done because we're going to have to go handle our business and protect ourselves. And so kind of looking at this in the longer term potential of this situation, this withdrawal really kind of invokes a lot of different things. Turkey is probably primed for some situations that aren't going to go over well, which, if you have businesses or operations in Turkey, that's definitely a real thing in terms of, you know, terrorism threats, operational disruptions, different internal politics that will happen within Turkey around the situation, but also the terror threat kind of at large globally could be reopening wide up, mm-hmm. especially if the Kurds aren't able to continue to put the pressure that they've been able to put on ISIS and some mm-hmm. of those other factions. So not a whole lot, but there's definitely some significant repercussions. And, you know, this is kind of agnostic of political party in the U.S. right now in terms of our withdrawal kind of from the Syria conflict. Republicans are upset. Democrats are upset.
I mean, the feedback to the president yesterday when this was announced, which was announced late in the evening the mm-hmm. night before, I mean, the feedback has been universally negative.
Yep.
Now, I have been entertained by, I would say, some Trump activist comments about unnecessary endless war and some of that kind of stuff. And, you know, I expected that. I mean, a lot of those folks, this is one of the reasons that they backed the president mm-hmm. in the 2016 elections, is that he said he was going to get us out of these foreign entanglements and some of this. At the same time, I feel like the country owes a debt of honor to the Kurds for the role that they played in combating ISIS and others. They took terrific casualties. I mean, just mm-hmm. horrendous number of casualties in doing so. This is a really bad spot for the country to be in. To your point, I think the broader security issue is, what does this raise in terms of in terms of terrorism and the impact on that? Does this give ISIS a potential new stronghold to reinvigorate themselves? I guess we'll find out.
Well, there's also advantages to Russia, to Iran, to other players. It feeds into the broader kind of, it's one more kind of swirl within the chaos that's going on in the Middle East right now with all the different topics. Not that it's ever a clean cut region to discuss, but it's definitely a step that gives some advantages to some other players that are causing disruptions on other issues and other things. So moving right along to another one of our favorite topics, Hong Kong. So a couple of developments. We're going to kind of tie into kind of more broad China and kind of corporate aspects of that, but we'll just start out with Hong Kong right now. Kind of some of the developments that have come out of there. Carrie Lam, their chief executive, has essentially kind of indicated that if this situation doesn't get it under control soon, China will probably have to intercede in what's going on there. China has, for the most part, been formally out of kind of security control in there. But this is the first time that Carrie Lam has ever kind of insinuated that China might get directly involved in security operations. The kind of statement comes on the heels of her using her executive power to ban masks and some other security things. Over the weekend, they had shut down the subways, they had shut down shops and shopping malls and things like that. So there was kind of a lot of kind of executive control exercise over the last few days, some of which, again, kind of like the violence that we saw last time with direct kind of ballistic action with security forces. Now they're saying China might be involved. And that's another kind of step in the escalation of what's going on there. That's the first insinuation that, hey, if you guys don't stop, China might actually take control. So, which kind of ties into the other component of Hong Kong that kind of broke over the weekend that's probably much more interesting now to corporations and their interactions with China was the Houston Rockets National Basketball Association team.
So their GM, right, the general manager.
Their GM put out a tweet that essentially said, stand by. See, I have a quote here somewhere. Fight for freedom, stand with Hong Kong. That did not go over well in China.
Yes.
China is a huge market for the NBA. China has since said, hey, we're not going to show any preseason games. We're going to cancel some other stuff. We're kind of reevaluating our whole partnership with you. The GM kind of summarily deleted his tweet, didn't really say too much more. Commissioner Adam Silver came out and said, hey, you know, we can't value dollars over our, you know, our kind of moral and ethics around some of this stuff, but yeah, we're still not going to talk about Hong Kong anymore. So kind of in the same breath of, I've directed everybody not to talk about Hong Kong and bring it up as a subject, but at the same time, you know, we stand for something that's counter to that kind of narrative. Mm-hmm. So there's kind of this contrast there. Kind of in addition to that, Blizzard, the video game interactive company, Manufacturer of World of Warcraft.
A division of Activision.
Also removed a player from a tournament that was part of what they were sponsoring or one of their tournaments. They removed him for comments that he made in support of Hong Kong. So there's a lot of companies facing a lot of different criticism from China right now that they are kind of actively saying, yeah, we're choosing our business over democracy. And that's the message that's playing out. That's not necessarily our stance on it, but
right,
that's the conversation that's coming out, that these companies are facing reputational kind of crunches against them for these stances or for people within their organization making pro-Hong Kong stances.
I recall that we talked about this a few weeks ago on a previous edition of the podcast where we were talking about Marriott hotels and was it the Gap?
Yep.
And someone else, another fashion company, had kind of stepped in it because they had T-shirts and they listed Macau and Hong Kong and Taiwan as separate entities. Marriott's issue is that in their country drop down, they didn't put
China behind it.
China as the, you know, like you'd go to China and you'd see the various Chinese cities and they didn't have Macau and Hong Kong and Taiwan listed on there. They had them listed as separate, you know, sovereign countries or sovereign cities like Singapore is. So this is interesting because this is China flexing their economic muscle. I mean, the NBA thing got the NBA's attention really quickly because China has a deal. The NBA has a contract with the state-run media in China that opens up the market of about 500 million people to watch the NBA, and professional basketball being one of the top sports for TV watching in China. And the NBA is experimenting with global expansion. They're playing games in India this season. They played a game. Did they play a game in China? I think they did.
Yep.
And I think they were looking at some other countries.
Mexico.
In Mexico. You know, and baseball's done London and Mexico and Japan. And I think we're going to continue to see this. And eventually, I would expect we may have some true global leagues here. I mean, the NBA is already running leagues in other parts of the country, but I expect that we might see true globalization of some of the professional sports leagues, which would be cool. But China's going to have their own take on this that is going to make this very difficult. I mean, this was purely China flexing economic power and forcing the NBA to make a change. And then the NBA they whiplashed. I mean, I'm surprised they didn't get hurt in how radically they got yanked in two different directions, because first they followed China's wish and then they mostly reversed themselves because they got so much pressure from the U.S. market, from their current largest market. So they're in a weird spot.
Yep.
From a pure business perspective, leave the politics out, they're in a very difficult situation because their future largest market ever is on the line with this. But they could also alienate their current largest market. What a difficult place to be in, let alone the politics of what's the right thing to do here.
And right.
As I think many people reminded them, they are a company based in the United States who started in the United States.
One, it's the today the New York Times had an article for companies in China, political hazards are getting harder to see. And the first line, I think, is very, very, very apropos for kind of what you just described too, and probably should have led with it. But the quote is, for international companies looking to do business in China, the rules were once simple. Don't talk about the three T's, Tibet, Taiwan, and Tiananmen Square crackdown. No longer. Ouch. Fast-changing geopolitical tensions, growing nationalism, and rise of social media in China have made it increasingly difficult for multinationals to navigate commerce in the communist country.
Yowza.
And that's pretty much what we've seen kind of play out, especially with Hong Kong and, you know, on the heels of trade wars and other things like that. You know, China means a little bit of business right now.
It's a huge economy to participate in. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I don't know if we have advice here on how to make the right decision. Certainly, organizations should be thinking about this. If you work in China, you operate in China, you desire to operate in China, know that strings come with the deal.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll have to find a way to balance the competing interests here around that. We always argue that you should do the right thing, whatever the right thing is. I think in this case, when it comes to democracy on the line, the answer is pretty clear, but you got to make your own decisions.
Right.
So that's it for this edition of the Managing Uncertainty podcast. We'll be back next week on Monday with a new edition of the podcast. Hope to hear from you then. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Managing Uncertainty, produced by the experts at BrightPath. To receive notifications of new episodes, join our newsletter at brightpath.com or subscribe through your favorite podcast player, such as iTunes or Google Play. Learn more about the services and trusted advice from BrightPath by visiting brightpath.com. That's BrightPath.com.